Monster Man, Special Episode, Deep Spawn. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode of Monster Man is a special episode brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters. Anyone who backs the Monster Man Patreon at the $5 or higher level gets the chance to choose a monster for a special episode all its own. And this episode is brought to you by Patreon backer Mark Stone, who wanted me to talk about a creature I wasn't really familiar with, the Deep Spawn. This monster first appeared in the Forgotten Realms campaign setting, I think, and went on to be included in the second edition Monsters Manual, which is where Mark first encountered it as a kid. So today we're going to be talking all about this slimy, betentacled monster maker and how you can use it in games. Mark, thank you very much for supporting Monster Man. If you would like your own special episode, you can go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 or higher level. And if you pledge at any level above $2, you'll also get access to my other podcast, Patron Deities, which is all about the deities and demigods supplement and using religion and mythology in your games. All right, let's get started. Now, this is an episode that is mainly about a D&D monster as opposed to something like the Sphinx that comes from mythology. So I thought we would start by describing the Deep Spawn because I think, you know, even more so than something like the Modron, most people probably aren't that familiar with it. The Deep Spawn is basically a big blobby creature with some tentacles. It's got three mouth tentacles and three kind of arm tentacles that it can grab things with, and it's huge, and its main ability is that it can spawn monsters. It lives underground, and if it consumes a creature, it can then, provided that it has access to sort of enough biomass, it can then make duplicates out of it. It can only make duplicates one at a time, and it makes them at a relatively slow pace unless it has access to a source of biological material. So, for example, if it finds itself in like a fresh battlefield or a graveyard or something, it can use the raw material from the bodies to create duplicates at a more rapid pace. But even then, only once every couple of days. So basically, it absorbs a creature, and from that it learns its like biological template. And then it can take raw biological material and make a new version of that creature out of it. Deep spawn are usually found in layers apparently full of treasure. Why they want this treasure, I don't know, but maybe the idea is that they use up, it's a little bit like the gelatinous cube, they use up all of the biological material, and so all of the kind of inorganic stuff, your clothing and armor and weapons and money and so forth, are left lying around. And they're usually protected by a relatively small number of their own spawn, but what can happen is that these monsters that they create, which become intensely loyal to them, kind of spread out into the wider area around them and can cause all kinds of problems. So basically, the Deep Spawn exists as an answer to the question, what are all these monsters doing in this dungeon in the first place? It's also a classic boss monster, right? You go down into the dungeon, you can kill as many Sturges as you like, but the Deep Spawn's just going to keep producing more unless you kill the Deep Spawn. So it's a little bit like the, fighting a horde of undead scenario where the goal is to kill the Necromancer because unless you do that, he's just going to keep making more and more and more undead. So the Deep Spawn is very much a bottom level of the dungeon boss monster kind of a creature, both in terms of its aesthetics and in terms of its sort of narrative role. It reminds me a little bit of Ubosathla from the Cthulhu Mythos. So Clark Ashton Smith, I think, described this creature Ubosathla, which is just like a mindless engine of creation. So that's not like a Deep Spawn, because the Deep Spawn is intelligent, but Ubosathla just sort of sits there and is the primal life giver, and creatures just kind of crawl out of it. I think that's Ubosathla that I'm thinking of. It might be a different one, actually. I think there's another Cthulhu Mythos deity that just kind of sits there and other monsters creep out of it and, you know, go off into the world. Also reminds me a little bit of the mother of monsters in Glorantha, which is, a sea creature that just kind of spawns other monsters and is an explanation for, you know, why is this part of the world so full of strange monsters. Combat-wise, the Deep Spawn is a, you know, great big monster, got a lot of tentacles. It has specific rules for how it can hit a sucker with another sucker, And this is remarkably little damage. This is like D2 damage, which seems really weird to me. Like, if someone picked me up in its mighty tentacles and bashed me to my friend, I'm pretty sure that would do more than D2 damage. But never mind, I do like a monster that gets to hit a guy with another guy. Their primary motivation seems to be self-preservation, and in the kind of the times that Deep Spawn appear in various Forgotten Realms products, they often seem to be used as weapons or tools by other factions, right? So they're like beholders that cultivate Deep Spawn in order to provide them with essentially an endless supply of foot soldiers or food. You know, you get one Deep Spawn and you keep it in the basement of your castle, and you just make sure that it has enough kind of biological raw material that you can use it to crank out an effectively endless supply of cannon fodder, or actual fodder if you're a cannibalistic type monster. There's also a story of a king who gets assassinated by having a Deep Spawn teleported into his castle, and there are other stories about them as well, which are interesting because in general they don't portray Deep Spawn as having much agency, but there is one, you know, named character Deep Spawn, well, at least one. You know, there's a lot of Forgotten Realms material out there. And I'm not a big Forgotten Realms fan, so I probably overlooked a few, but they're definitely named character Deep Spawn out there doing Deep Spawn stuff. Sometimes this can lead to undercutting the Deep Spawn's dramatic potential. So, for example, there's a dragon in the Forgotten Realms that keeps a Deep Spawn around to produce sheep for it to eat, which, in my view, damages the dignity of both the Deep Spawn and the dragon. It makes sense, but it's not very exciting, which is one of those aspects of the kind of like realistic approach to D&D. But fighting the Deep Spawn itself is not really the exciting thing about this monster, right? It's just a big tentacle guy if you're having a fight with it. This is particularly true because the Deep Spawn's ability to birth new monsters operates on a timescale so slow that it can't really do it during a fight, right? It takes, at best, several days for the Deep Spawn to produce a new creature. Now, that's very fast by producing a new adult life form standards, but it's a lot longer than a typical Dungeons & Dragons combat, which means, kind of unfortunately, that in a showdown with the Deep Spawn actually gets less interesting. Like, here's this monster that has provided the central problem of our scenario, but when we get to it, we're just going to kick it in the face. I mean, they're tough, they're still strong, they've got some magical abilities, and they've got a lot of hit points and attacks, and they'll grab you with one of their tentacles, and they're smart enough to know about all the different magical items that are among their treasure, so each of these tentacle limbs can be swinging some legendary lost hero's magic warhammer or whatever, but still, I think if you're gonna have a gimmick, ideally you want to use that gimmick at all times. And in general, it feels unrewarding to say, well, you know, here's this devious monster with this weird magic power, and the way that we solve that is we get up in its face and stab it with a spear. So if I were running a big climactic fight with a Deep Spawn, I would allow it to kind of spit out unfinished versions of the creatures that it was gestating, right? So just say like, well, yeah, obviously it takes a Deep Spawn days to produce a perfect, like an actual duplicate of an organism, but if it just wants to barf out like hideous monstrosities, you know, all like messed up and not complete and, you know, put together from just random scraps of whatever it has lying around, you know, staggering, screeching nightmares of barely flesh-covered bone and all mismatched parts that just live in a constant agony and can't do anything but claw and stab and shriek, I'd let it puke those out at a pretty rapid rate, right? Like, oh, you know, here's the emergency situation, quick, just pop out everything we've got, stick it all together no matter if it's right, and then just have a bunch of shuddering, lurching horrors staggering out to fight the party. From a game balance standpoint, the Deep Spawn doesn't need to be any tougher than it already is. You're kind of gilding the lily, but still, I feel like if you're going to have a monster that spawns other monsters, and then you're going to have a climactic boss fight showdown with it, it ought to spawn other monsters during the boss fight showdown, right? And that's what you bought your tickets for. The other thing about the Deep Spawn is that it can spawn the same creature over and over again, right? At one level, that's very simple. All it has to do is eat one bugbear, and then it can just basically produce itself an endless supply of bugbears. Now, these are all the same bugbear, right? It's just that for most of our Dungeons & Dragons purposes, this doesn't really make a difference, because effectively, all bugbears are already the same bugbear. To a bugbear, there could be a lot of differences between the individuals of a particular, you know, bugbear tribe, but to an outsider, all bugbears look pretty much alike. They have the same stats, they have the same objectives, they have the same equipment. They're, you know, they're all the same. That is, that the deep spawn just takes one original, and then it can produce copy after copy after copy after copy of the same original. So this is bad news if the deep spawn gets a hold of, say, I don't know, a red dragon, or maybe that's a little much, but like a troll. It's not harder for the deep spawn. It might need a little bit more biological material, but it's not any more difficult for the deep spawn to make three trolls than two. Once it has the original template, it can just keep spamming copies of the thing. This is nice from the DM's perspective for several reasons. The first is that it lets you adjust your difficulty level, right? That if, you know, if the players are, if you want just to have like a horde of minion type monsters, well, it so happens that the deep spawn has a kobold as its template at the moment. If you want to make things a little more challenging, the deep spawn ate a giant spider. The deep spawn can't duplicate certain creatures. It can't do things that are sort of magical by their nature. So for example, if it ate a skeleton, it wouldn't be able to produce a new skeleton because the skeleton's not really alive, right? Like, it could probably produce a skeleton, but it would just lie there dead. It's not able to do things that are animated by magic, so I would imagine that the same thing is true of constructs. For instance, if it ate a clay golem, then all that would come out at the end would be a lump of clay, right? It's not a living being. So there are certain limitations on what the deep spawn can and can't duplicate. But the other interesting thing to do is to have the deep spawn duplicate a person, someone that the player characters, you know, have a connection to, or that the society in some way has a connection to, or it could just be an aesthetic thing, right? If you are invading the enemy's lair, it is extra creepy if the enemy's army consists of, like, all these soldiers armed with, you know, maybe nothing, maybe just their bare fists, or maybe all the different things that have, you know, been accumulated in this dungeon over the years, but they're all the same person. It's especially interesting if they're someone that the PCs might be looking for. So, you know, maybe generations ago, the last queen of this noble bloodline went off to go slay the monster that lives in the caverns beneath blah, 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 and she never came back. And then one day she pops up and is like, oh my goodness, she's returned. And, you know, she tells you some confused tale about the caverns, and a party of bold heroes go down there, only to find that it's inhabited by nothing but copies of this same woman. And all the deep spawn's hordes are just the same human over and over and over again. And they would be aware of this, but they don't really have their memories. One of the things that seems to vary about the deep spawn from edition to edition is the extent to which it can duplicate the abilities of certain types of creatures. So for example, like, if it were to duplicate a wizard, my understanding of the rule is that the wizard would know how to cast spells, but wouldn't remember any spells. So they'd still have to get their hands on a spell book somewhere, which means that duplicating a wizard is not all that fantastic. Duplicating a barbarian, by contrast, seems like a pretty sound idea. Though I don't know that the deep spawn necessarily has this level of mechanical knowledge. So there's something very creepy about this idea of the deep spawn's army of photocopies, and they might be astonished. Like, they're fully intelligent, they're not just drones. So you could produce this army of humans who would, you know, see each other and be like, huh, we all kind of look alike. But they might assume that that's just what people look like. You know, they all come from the same parent, therefore they're all related. That makes sense. So they have procedural memory. They know how to do things, but they don't have any kind of, like, they have only the haziest recollections of their former life, because they are effectively a new creature. An even better thing to do with this would be to take advantage of that one player character in every Dungeons & Dragons group who's got amnesia, right? Because there's always one, isn't there? There's somebody who's like, yeah, I want to have a dark and mysterious past. I want to be, you know, a king or a fugitive from the Thieves Guild or something. And I got, you know, knocked on the head. I mean, this is like a classic literary background, right? To be like a foundling, you know, like Scyld Scheffing in Beowulf, who, you know, washes up on the shore. You know, lots of player characters who have a mysterious background. And this is a gift that the player gives the DM, asking, please fill in my backstory for me. And it benefits both parties. You know, both the player, who's therefore going to get something that's connected to the overall structure of the campaign, and the DM, who is basically being given an invitation by the player to mess with them. Well, what if when you go down that dungeon, you find that the Deep Spawn's army is composed entirely of you? And then as you learn what happened, you're like, well, look, the Deep Spawn's ability is that if it eats someone, it can then make duplicates of them. So I'm a duplicate. I think that would be a fun revelation for a certain type of player. I mean, maybe if what you were really hoping for was that you'd be a lost prince, you're going to be a little disappointed when it turns out that you are a clone who came out of the tummy of a big ball of goo and tentacles. But I think a certain type of player would be into it. And it's very rare that you get the opportunity to have a genuine moment of horrific revelation in a Dungeons & Dragons game. And we talked before about how horror monsters in D&D very seldom are horrific, right? Like, Strahd is Dracula from Marvel Comics or Dracula from Castlevania. He's not Dracula from Dracula, and that's okay. But he's within that kind of, like, Hammer horror. It's a horror-themed gothic adventure, not genuinely a horror game. You're not going to get much legit horror in Dungeons & Dragons because that's just not the kind of story that we're typically engaged in. You know, that's the you can put all the spooky trappings on something you like, but it's a spooky adventure, not a horror story. But that's a horror story. Like, the attacking the sense of identity and the revelation that you're not who you thought you were. And indeed, it could, in certain games, raise moral questions, right? The Deep Spawn's creations are, apart from their weird attachment to the Spawn that created them, they love their mother. Apart from that, they are normal creatures of their type. I mean, they seem to be fully aware moral agents. So you then would just be like, oh, well, I feel really bad just slaughtering a bunch of me's. So that means that you have this additional puzzle, right? We're going to solve this problem by going around these guys and destroying the Deep Spawn. So now we have this additional kind of challenging tactical element where not only do we think that we can't hack our way through the Deep Spawn's Legion of Soldiers, but actually, we would feel pretty bad doing that because, you know, these poor goofs, it's not really their fault. Which is a lot more interesting than just bugbears. But maybe a bit bleaker than you want your typical Dungeons & Dragons campaign to be. I mean, I would go for it because gonzo horror dark fantasy stuff is something that I put a certain amount of into my game, but I don't know that I would necessarily recommend it for every campaign. So yeah, overall, I feel like the Deep Spawn is a monster that is most interesting as a kind of scenario objective, or as, you know, a setting element. It does have this small problem where I don't know how you overcome the natural tendency to just repeat the best thing you have, right? So, if you want all the monsters in your area to be creations of the Deep Spawn, and if you want to have some trolls in the area, you have to kind of explain why. If the Deep Spawn's really trying to just maximize the defensive potential of its children, well, it's just not all trolls. Like, would it even bother creating those bugbears? Maybe it only had bugbears at first, and that, you know, the bugbears have been there ever since. Since they are normal bugbears, I would assume that they can reproduce. You just have to assume that it consumed a breeding pair rather than just one bugbear that it would constantly reproduce copies of. But I think that's not too big of a problem. I think that's very consistent with the focus of kind of the time of the Deep Spawn. I think of it as a creature from the early 1990s. It might be the late 1980s. I don't know off the top of my head. But that's an era of the kind of ecology-focused D&D where a lot of monsters had this sort of aspect of their text focusing a great deal on their life cycles and on their impact on the biomes around them, even when those are kind of artificial constructs, like, you know, this is a thing that lives in the deeps, i.e. the Underdark, like that network of underground places inhabited by drow and beholders and mind flayers and so on, rather than in a really naturalistic environment. But there's a kind of a recurring theme in the Forgotten Realms, isn't there, of disruption to the natural world by monsters. Sort of ecological themes are important in that campaign setting. For me, I think that, you know, because it deals with duplication and reproduction, that means it necessarily addresses kind of questions of identity, which means that you can use it as a horror monster if you want to. And even if you're just kind of doing straightforward fantasy adventure stories, I think it's very easy to give them this kind of eerie horror story-like gloss by using the thing of having, you know, all these creatures be exact duplicates. You could have that as a clue in the kind of mystery of what's going on. You know, have the player characters notice that, you know, okay, we fought this troll and we fought that troll, but, like, look, this is some genetic quirk or just some distinctive feature, you know, not a scar or something that would be acquired during life, but something that's part of this troll's physiology that is identical between these two trolls, that actually they're the same troll there. I mean, they're clones. I would say that you can see the deep spawn as something that like a mad wizard would capture in order to create clones. Except that deep spawn are intelligent, so you'd have to kind of negotiate with it perhaps, or dominate it in some other way. But, you know, he's got one in his lab, and he's, you know, throwing monsters or people into it so that he can create exact genetic duplicates of them. Indeed, maybe it's even kind of a Invasion of the Body Snatchers type of thing, where your evil wizard is abducting people, feeding them to his pet deep spawn, and producing versions that are loyal to the deep spawn, so that he can go and, you know, replace whatever leading members of the government or high-ranking military officers or the people with the keys to the treasure vaults or something with his clones, except that at that point he'd need enough mind control that it's not clear why he's not just mind controlling those people in the first place, right? But maybe he's just got the deep spawn controlled because he found, you know, the amulet of deep spawn control, and he's exploiting the loyalty of the deep spawn. Of course, it could just be the deep spawn's plan, but that almost feels weird, right? Like, deep spawn are big alien creatures with a bunch of tentacles. It's hard to imagine that they care about who's got the keys to the bank vault, even though there are named, effectively, deep spawn supervillains in the Forgotten Realms. That comes off as odd to me. Honestly, I'd almost prefer to make the deep spawn not intelligent, or not as intelligent as a human. I mean, it's intelligence 17 or something. You could definitely do a version of it, which is just like, yeah, I just spawn monsters as a reflex. That's what's happening. Maybe it was intelligent, but it's cursed or it got damaged or something like that. Because I feel like the horror of being duplicated has something to do with the impersonality of it. I don't know. I feel like there's room for either the, like, copying a person conspiracy version and the, like, I'm just gonna, you know, spam Minotaurs because Minotaurs is what I've got version of the deep spawn. And you could decide either that it's the unintelligent version that's normal and that here we have a rare intelligent one, or something happened to this one that caused it to revert to this kind of animalistic state. I think either would be fine. So the deep spawn is definitely a fascinating character. It's definitely an end boss. It's been described as, like, this is a creature that is a scenario, and I think that that's definitely true. Although what kind of scenario very much depends on what context it winds up being part of. But yeah, I think it kind of surprises me that this isn't something that was, you know, there wasn't a monster creating monster that appeared earlier. I mean, maybe there wasn't, I'm just forgetting about it, but it does seem like, you know, sort of a natural evolution of the ability of things like high powered demons to summon other demons, right? That's something that fulfills the role of kind of being a general. I just think that the way it's written, it's not as exciting to fight as it is to kind of make your way to through all of its various waves of minions. But I don't think it would be very hard to change that just by having it be able to produce crummy, incomplete minions really fast. So, okay, that is the deep spawn. That is a creature that I was completely unfamiliar with when Mark suggested it for this episode. So I'm really pleased that I got the chance to take a look at it and come up with some suggestions for using it in a game. I think probably most of those are pretty obvious, but then this is my first exposure to the thing, so I hope you humor me. Anyway, I hope that you all enjoyed the episode, and if you'd like to choose a monster for a special episode, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and back at the $5 or higher level. And of course, I want to thank my Patreon backers at all levels for continuing to make this show and special episodes like this one possible. In our next episode, we're going to be returning to our regularly scheduled perusal of the Fiend Folio, and we're going to talk about our monsters, including the vengeance-minded Revenant and a sweet little baby muskox. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods Advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.